flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Prior to the regular meeting, for October 4th, 2017, we have an audit committee meeting.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
I'm going to walk through this large product, if I have time. And so basically our role as the external auditor is to primarily report on the financial condition of the school district. And so the first document that you have in your presentation materials is the draft financial statement. Since it's the district's financial statement and Carol has prepared it with the disclosures and management's discussion and analysis, the most important part of this financial statement is our auditor's opinion, which directly behind the table of contents on pages 1 and 2. Pages 1 talks about what we audit. We audit each of the governmental funds, the fiduciary funds, general fund, school lunch fund, special aid fund, and capital project fund. We audit the related notes to the financial statements. Management's responsible for presenting the financial statements. We're responsible for making a determination as to whether or not they fairly state the financial condition of the school district. And then at the top of page 2, which is the most important part of our report, is our opinion. And our opinion states that we feel that the financial statements fairly present in all material respects the financial position of each of the funds that we audited, and the changes in financial position for the year that ended in accordance with accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America. So it's an unmodified opinion. It's the highest level that the Board of Education gets, that we feel that their financial statements are fairly stated in the school district. There's some additional information that we communicate to you in this financial statement. So pages 3 through 14 are management's discussion and analysis. There's some information that more generally speaks about the financial condition of the school district. Pages 47 through 51. 47, you might remember, is the schedule of revenues and expenditures, budget to actual, and we'll come back to that in a couple minutes. Pages 49 and 50. 49 has to do with the fact that the district under GASB 45 has to report based upon an actuarial valuation what their unfunded actuarial accrued liability is. So you can see it's $32 million. It's for presentation purposes only. As you recall, the district is funding on a pay-as-you-go basis, both the current health insurance premiums and those for the retirees. Page 50 is a schedule for 3 years of activity for the district's proportionate share of their asset in the previous year for the teacher's retirement system. Currently, it's a liability because the system overall is underfunded. And then the same information for the employee's retirement plan for the past 3 years. And so the way that this table works, and it feeds into the statement of net position, the second row in this table is the district's proportionate share of the liability for the teacher's retirement system. This year it's a liability of $1,154,000.
So how did it go from an asset of, is that because they had the GASB change last year?
That's because when they assumed the interest rate that they used to calculate the number, it was a much more preferential interest rate. So if you
wasn't there a change last year in the accounting as to how you had to value it on your books, but it was really just like that?
That's coming up for GASB 45. For the pension systems, the accounting's still the same. But what you might remember is that, and I'm going to direct you back to page 43, actually 42, that the two systems have an audit of their financial condition, and then they give information to the various participating municipalities as to, based on their salaries that are for which contributions are made, what their proportionate share of the asset and liability is. And you might remember that in years past, the rates that they're using are fairly high. So the employee's retirement system is using an assumed rate of 7%. And then the teacher's retirement system in the previous year used a rate of 8%. They dropped the rate from 8% to 7.5%. And you could see by looking at this chart what the change in the rate would be.
So it's $11.5 million
because
of that point.
Correct. So to that point, the numbers are a little bit different for this year, but that's a good analysis, and that's why the numbers are significant.
Does that mean that we expect that at the next contribution, the contribution will be higher?
No, I don't think so, because the contribution's calculated by the board on a rolling average as far as what the start...
The board of the pension?
The board of the... Right, the board that sets the pension. So the teacher's retirement system has a board, the employer's retirement system...
But presumptively, they're calculated... Who sets this interest rate?
The interest rate. The actuarial rate is agreed upon by the retirement system and the actuary who's preparing the calculation. And it's based off of an investment portfolio, which is identified back on page 41. And so it's not the long-term treasury rate like we would expect, which would make that discount rate a little bit more realistic. It's based upon this portfolio composition at the bottom of page 41. And so they feel that they could support, based upon their asset allocation, the rates that they're using for discount purposes. Sure. So as of the valuation date, so the teacher's retirement system is June 30th of last year. The employee's retirement system has a March year end of this most recent fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And you could see that predominantly 37% of their assets, 37 and 36, are at interest rates, long-term expected rates of interest of 6.1 and 4.55. So they're using the composition of this portfolio to say to their actuary, calculate the figures for us based upon where we are now as far as assets and what we expect those assets will be worth, and how does that relate to what we expect our payouts to be. Okay, and so that number will change every year, and honestly, that's why it's for reporting information only. It doesn't drive the rate that's assessed by the boards. Honestly, as a profession, we were concerned about what does that mean? You know, if their estimate's off...
Are they going to say, we're light, everybody has to contribute more?
Right? Either that, right, or is this going to be a moving number every year because they're looking at a different actuarial assumption discount rate? And I think that's probably going to be the case. So, I mean, you know, the rates came down for the teacher's retirement system, employee's retirement system. They're fairly flat.
I think there's some correlation, though. If I'm sitting on that pension board to say, hey, we don't think we're going to have as much as we previously thought, we need more contributions.
It should, but this is such a long-term look, honestly. And the other look as far as setting the current rate is historical, the last 5 years on a rolling average. So that's... kind of, I would think it should. I agree with you, but there's kind of a disconnect between this process and the process of rate setting. And I would expect also if the system overall is funded, and you could see the funding percentage at the bottom of page 42, if I'm 94.7% funded for the employee's retirement system, why am I still charging school districts 16% for tier 3 and 4, just to pick on tier 3 and 4 on an average? And even for TRS, if I'm really 99% funded, why did I not bring that 11.72 down to something less than 9.8%?
This says that the TRS is 99.01% funded for their expected liability.
Correct.
At what rate? At the 7.5% interest
Correct.
Rate?
Correct.
Which that's is their, a, that's their hedge, because 7.5% is high,
correct.
At 99%
it's not going to happen. And even the other actuaries that the school district uses to figure out their OPEB liability, you know, if you look at that rate, that's 5%. You could see that on page 45. So I think it's probably an unrealistic assumption as far as the discount rate, but that's what they agree upon with the actuary and their reporting information, and it's just for financial reporting purposes. It's not going to change anything as far as the way they should do things. Mm-hmm. So going back to what else we're reporting on page 51, there's a 10-year schedule of what the contractually required contributions are for each of the retirement systems, and then that as a percentage of the total covered payroll. Okay, so that's a blended rate. It's 12% for the teacher's retirement system, and it's about 12% for the employee's pension plan. This is based on information that comes from the systems as far as what's been paid, and the covered payroll that they show is eligible for participation. And then the last thing in the required supplementary information, that is the last thing, we have other supplementary information on pages 52 through 54. So the difference between the required supplementary information and other supplementary information is up until this point, the required supplementary information is what I need to consider from a professional standard in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles and what GASB asked me to present. The state has another set of information that they want presented, which is the other supplementary information. On 52, they want to know what the district's original budget was, what was the budget increased by. It was obviously increased by prior year's encumbrances, And there were certain budgetary revisions that the board approved during the year, where you could see those in detail, are going to be back on page 33. So anytime there's a source of revenue that was not anticipated, the district does a really good job with approving that as funding and then identifying the best way to expend it. So if you think about it, then you have the authority to spend the original budget plus your last year's encumbrances plus these budget revisions, because it's new funding sources that you hadn't anticipated. And so that brings the total budget up to $41,654,000. And then the second part of this page shows the state that you're within the 4%, so that you have not carried over in unassigned fund balance more than 4% of next year's budget, and you're in compliance high with real property tax law. The other schedules that the state wants to see on pages 53 and 54, 53 is anytime you have capital project activity, they want to see by project in a broad-based sense what was approved, how was it funded, is it funded by bond money, is it funded by state aid, is it funded by transfers, and then what's left to remain to be spent from the authorized funding sources. So the differences on this schedule are the first line is an old project which was funded by an interfund transfer. It was the roof project from 2012-13. And to the extent that the project was finished, that $52,856 went back to the general fund. The next group of projects has to do with what was going to be covered under the bond. And so you'll see a list of budgeted amounts and expenditures for the year. And you can see within that category the remaining amount to be spent off to the right, the fund balance for those projects, high school gymnasium, all the way down through the district-wide PA clocks.
So what does this mean, gymnasium? 150, probably, you know, 101, 850, unexpended balance, 48,000. What does that mean?
That means for that particular allocation of $150,000 of the total bonded project, which you expect to spend, $101,000 and $850 has been spent so far, and there's $58,150 to be spent.
48,150. So, was that project, Carol, not $150,000? Did we only?
It was. At the time, it was budgeted. It was estimated to be $150,000.
Ended up being $101,850.
Right, but it's part of the overall loan.
Right. So this is at this is as of June 30th.
We didn't bond that.
Yeah, that was included.
The gymnasium, we paid it out of our budget, out of our reserve fund.
This was the high school, the wall.
Oh, that was the wall.
Yeah.
I thought that was
No,
the middle school gymnasium.
No, the middle school is by a budget transfer. Yes.
So the middle school is the 134,728.
And that was exact.
But that's interesting, because the amount that we, I thought, would approve was 150 exact. Okay. Got it. I'm with you. I was confused at the high school. I know that was in the bond. I was confused. I thought that was the bleachers. So middle school gymnasium.
We have in the reserve.
Right. Correct. So what you don't see here, there could be open commitments, purchase orders for the balance of the contract. Mm-hmm. And this is a snapshot as of June 30th. Okay.
Yeah.
On the bottom, the next line, the middle school gymnasium, as we're talking about, was an interfund transfer through the budget. And the Smart Schools Bond Act, so there's been some spending, but obviously we know the money's not in yet. So all of that state aid, the $1,034,000, is listed as a reduction of fund balance because it's not available at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so basically what you did is you used bond anticipation notes, right, because it's less expensive to do that than sizing the total debt borrowing. And that's why overall, if you look at the schedule, there's a shortfall because you didn't issue the debt. We remember that temporary financing doesn't create fund balance. The only thing that creates fund balance is going to be permanent financing or pay down of the temporary debt. Okay, so that's.
And when we do the permanent financing, pay off the temporary financing with the permanent financing, so it still doesn't create.
Correct. That's correct. The next schedule that the state wants is on page 41, a reconciliation of the net investment in capital assets. So you know per GASB 34 on the statement of net position, which is back on page 15, you report as a school district all the capital assets that are purchased. They're captured in a capital asset inventory record. There's depreciation charges every year. And then what happens is that for purposes of that statement of net position on page 15, when you look at your position allocation, this portion that's invested in capital assets has to be reduced by the amount of debt that's outstanding, okay, because you don't have a position in the full capital asset if there's outstanding money on it. It's encumbered, basically. So this schedule actually reconciles the total capital assets net of depreciation, first line, less all of the bond anticipation notes, bonds payable, and installment purchase debt, down to $12,517,000, which if you went back to page 15, in your net position category, you will see that that's the first row under the net position, okay? And so that's just for GASB 34 purposes. We know that if you're going to ahead and you're going to buy a computer or you're going to buy a capital asset, that's a charge against the budget. But this is a different way of reflecting things under GASB 34. So that's what the state requires as far as presentation. Within management's discussion and analysis, just going back to that, on page 3, there are some financial highlights that are referenced. And so the first bullet talks about the change in net position. And the change in net position is better reflected on a table that's included on page 6. And so the change in net position really is a summary, in summary form, the statement of net position for the 2 years. It's for informational purposes, because this is not the way the district's books and records are maintained, just to give you a sense as to whether or not your liabilities, unfunded liabilities, are growing quicker than whatever your long-term or capital assets might be. And so as your auditor, the expectation would be is that the unrestricted deficit piece of the total net position is going to be getting larger every year, that deficit. Because if you think about it, you have other post-employment benefits that the actuary is telling the district you need to present for financial reporting. You can't fund them. You're not allowed to fund them. And so if you look back at the OPEB obligation in the liability section on that chart, you could see right off the bat that net OPEB liability obligation, based upon the actuary's calculation, amortized, is now up to $13.6 million versus $12.1 million. So as your auditor, my expectation is going to at least be that the deficit grows by that amount. Why didn't it grow fully by that amount? Because you're paying bonds down during the year, right? So there are some other long-term liabilities that mitigate the effect of that financial reported piece. The better way to really look at that is to say, when you go to the financial statement on page 15, is everything in the asset section that's below inventory, which is capital assets not being depreciated and capital assets being depreciated, on the modified accrual basis, which is the way the district prepares their books and records, you would not see that. So that's an asset only for financial reporting purposes, okay? Anything related to the pension calculation is also for financial reporting purposes. We talked about it has nothing to do with the way your contributions assessed or what you pay. So you don't see that on your modified accrual basis financial statement. And then in the liability section, everything that's below bond anticipation notes are all my long-term liabilities, and they have a schedule of maturity. We know the bonds installment purchase debt have a schedule of payment maturity. And these other items, such as the compensated absences payable, this is based upon a calculation as to time that's earned according to whatever bargaining unit agreement is in place. That has a schedule which will apply only when people separate from the district. So the reason why I'm bringing that up is because you have to look at the relationship of the change in capital assets and the change in long-term liabilities. Okay, so that's one way to look at it. And as each year goes on, your compensated absences, for the most part, are going to grow. Right, people earn more time. Not everyone necessarily takes their time. And so the value of that for reporting purposes is going to be a fairly large number. It's if you're looking at it here, it's $2.7 million in round numbers. OPEB, we know, is a year-by-year add-on. And then you have your share of the pension liability.
Where's the 2.7?
There's a short-term piece, which is under due and payable within 1 year for $200,000, which is an estimate of what the payout would be next year. And then there's a long-term piece, or due and payable after 1 year, of $2,563,000. So those are the two pieces.
So and should we be, as those grow, should we be increasing the reserve for post-employment benefits?
That's a good question. So do you want to look at the reserve now? That's a good question. And so my answer as the auditor is that's really a board decision. But what I will say to you is that if you go back on page 10, I will say to you that the history of the district is that that's a liability that's created every single year because people leave. So you want to be at a funding level that's meaningful. I, as the auditor, look at the fact that you have reserve funding of $1,493,000, and that includes what the board resolved to add as of June 30th, 2017, which was $407,000.
So we have 1.122 last year.
You have 1,493,000.
Now we have 1,493,000 because we increased it.
By $407,000, but you appropriated in the 16-17 budget 38.
So we took out 38, we added 400 and change.
Correct.
And now we're at 1.493, mm-hmm. which reflects a portion of,
The 2,763,000. So to your question,
we're at 50%.
Just around 50%.
Is that common for every district on Long Island?
Every district is different, and you really have to look at the approximate retirement dates. If you could look into the crystal ball, when do you think people are going to leave? And then will you have enough in that reserve without having to increase your salary codes in the budget going forward to try to pick up not only what you're going to pay in salary, but the portion that relates to this. I have districts as clients that have that 100% funded. I have some that are not as fiscally responsible that have nothing there. It really, it's a balancing act when you look at your total fund balance at the end of the year as to whether or not you have the ability to fund. I think it's a good thing that the board did fund it.
It seems like we should have a target. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's 50 and we're there. Maybe it's 100. But a target to say we want to get to, at some point, this level of funding for this reserve.
Right. And you historically want to look at what the payouts have been and look at what you expect the payouts to be.
So that is obviously an obligation. That $2.5 million is an obligation of seven, whatever the number is, that we have over 30 years.
Well, over until people leave.
That's what I mean. So and if that somebody starts today, they have a week saved, whatever.
However much
we're going to have to pay them for 30 years. So it's
or until they leave.
Yeah.
Right. So so if you were very tight on fund balance, you wouldn't want to have 100% there because, honestly, you could use more money in the retirement contribution reserve.
Is that vacation and sick?
Vacation, sick, no incentive.
So you could, if you renegotiated a contract, as contract negotiations come up, you could reduce the number of days as part of a negotiation that they can get paid out on when they leave, and then you have immediate cash you can pull out of that reserve.
Correct. Then you would resize the reserve. Right. You could allocate it to any.
You got it?
Never thought about it about being cash.
But that's how you turn it to cash. If they say, hey, we want X now, well, the only way we're going to give you that is you give us back a little bit later, and we got the cash portion of it now, or we don't have to add more to the reserve to get us more comfortable.
Correct. It's set aside now. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. The other reserves that you have just going down the table, so the unemployment insurance, the only change between the 2 years is interest because we have to allocate that. In the retirement contribution reserve, the budget provided that you use almost $122,000. It was $121,852. So it came down by that amount, okay, and then a little bit of interest had been earned there.
We've been pulling that down by that amount every year.
Right. And so I think the thing for consideration is the obligation for the past year was $523,000. So you have a little bit more than 1 year there. And the question is from
What do we have in our budget? I didn't mean to cut you off. What do we have in our budget this year for that obligation?
Might be about $600,000.
Okay.
As a line item.
So we're over budgeted based on what it was last year, this year. I'm not saying over budget. That's a good word.
You know what you have to do? You have to look at the salaries, though, because there's an increase in
salaries.
Right. So this you may not be over that much. You have to look at that. But, you know, if you're talking about reserves and where you want to place money, I think it's appropriate to look at that because, you know, if things become very tight, you know right off the bat that you're going to have that obligation to deal with.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good decision that the board made to look at that going forward to see whether or not additional money should be added.
Can we, just as a kind of a governance, at some point at budget time, talk about
where we want each of these individual reserves to get to, have that conversation about what's reasonable, what's responsible, and understand what other districts do and where we want to get, because it'll factor into, I think, you know, maybe it's a matter of putting $20,000 in the budget for that reserve each year to get to where we want, but, you know, it's just kind of occurring to me now, it's not something that we've really focused on. We've said, wow, we're lucky, we have extra money, where can we put it, you know?
Yeah, usually I think what happens is, and I'm positive, but I think that once it gets to that number, a conversation happens between the two of you at some point in time, too, to see what's reasonable.
But that's
all. And then a recommendation is made to the board, but you make it in the end. But if you gave it more information, probably would help.
But maybe
understanding exactly what Carol's recommending to put 200 here,
right,
100 there.
But maybe the answer is, though, if we have that conversation first, we factor in X dollars to go into that reserve from the budget initially,
yeah,
you know, so that we can, just like you want to get off of the 1.2 mm-hmm. or whatever, get that down to 500 to 800, raise that up to where we need it to be.
Yeah.
Right, because the combination
of
the fund.
Not just that reserve, the maintenance reserve, whether we want to do a capital,
yeah,
the employee benefit, and the...
Yeah, and that usually happens after the budget, though.
But that's my point. That's a, wow, we found this extra money.
That happens after the budget, but you're talking about building it into...
I'm saying, have a conversation around building
it. Reflect it in the budget.
Yeah.
And increase the budget accordingly. So we say, let's say you guys do a great job, and you say, hey, we can raise this, run this whole district at a 1% uptick. And we say, wow, we have an opportunity to be a little more fiscally responsible, make it 1.5, and put away some money for a rainy day in those things that are underfunded. So we're 50% funded in this, whatever it was that we were talking about, the vacation and sick. Let's get it to 51% or 52%, I don't know.
Right.
Do people do that or no?
Yeah, some districts have a targeted plan as to what
yeah.
their ultimate number is. It's typically a percentage of the aggregate compensated absence balance,
yeah.
and then they talk about how they're going to get there.
That's what we should do, whether pension liability or the vacation. We should. If we don't have a target, we're never going to get there, and then it's walk if it's good or not.
The repair reserve is fairly straightforward, so there's money that's appropriated in the budget, and then there was an increase of $100,000. And so basically you're at the same place, you're almost at the same place actually. Debt service is new because when you issued the bond anticipation notes, you received a premium because you're in good financial condition. That gets reserved until such time as you start to pay down debt. So that's new for this year. Okay.
So they gave us the money, we put that in a box, and then we use it to pay the interest.
You pay, right. Yeah. And then you have your assigned pieces, which is the appropriated to reduce next year's levy. The unappropriated piece and assigned has to do with the encumbrances, and the unassigned, which is the piece that can be no more than 4% of next year's budget if you want to be in compliance with real property tax law.
1.685 is 4% of
next year's budget.
So we're good.
Yes, right. And that's the number when we looked at the state schedule before. That's why the state incorporated the schedule recently over the last number of years. Back on page, let's see.
Is there any guidance where you're looking for that page from the state around being over-reserved in other categories like the vacation and the benefits?
Okay, so that's a good question. So the only one that you cannot be over-reserved on is the EBLR, the Employee Benefit Accrued Liability Reserve. The state's very clear on that under general municipal law. And
over-reserved is 102%.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, a dollar over 100%,
right.
Really,
right.
Honestly.
But you can be 100% reserved, so you're good. Okay.
You're good. Everything else that you have as far as reserves, there are no caps on them.
And what do we do with that money when it's reserved? Do we get interest on it?
Mm-hmm.
At like a quarter of a percent? Coming, right? Yeah.
Wow, that's generous. We were Yeah, there's segregated cash to cover those restricted balances. That's what the state wants you to do, so you do have that. Okay, in these, just going down the table, in the food service category, it used to be school lunch fund. It's now been renamed school food service. If you look off to the right, that increases what your profit was for the year. So you had a little bit of profit, almost $5,000, okay? We'll look at that in a minute. And then we looked at the capital project fund, and I talked to you about the fact that it's a deficit because the $5 million ban as opposed to permanent funding. Right. So how did you get your fund balance to the level that it's at? And so, you know, in general, the way you look at it, if you look at the general fund, you increase the fund balance overall by, I'm off to the right, $962,000, okay? And growth in fund balance to the extent that you have it is either from revenues in excess of what you expected to recognize, and budget dollars that had not been spent, okay? So on page 11, then, there's a reconciliation of the unassigned fund balance, and you can see you started the year with $1,649,000 and you closed the year with $1,685,000. So net, we're talking about a change of about $36,000, right? That's 4% of next year's budget, right? You know, the increase on the 4% of next year's budget. On page 47, there's analysis of the budgeted revenues and the recognized revenues by the school district. And so in new money, you expected that you were going to recognize $39,760,000. We saw the budget revisions before for donations and such, so that's why the budget revision shows that the total is $39,958,000. You actually recognized through billings. You may not have all the money in right now because we know we're still waiting for state aid. We're still waiting for tuition, waiting for our Native American revenue, all of it, okay? And so based on $40,134,000 of recognized revenues, there's a positive variance of $175,000. And the area that it's pretty much driven by is really the miscellaneous area. And so what's in miscellaneous? You have E-rate money. You had a premium on the TAN. So when you borrowed your tax anticipation note, they gave you $65,000 because you have a good bond rating, okay? So that's included in miscellaneous revenue. It doesn't have to be reserved because it has to do with general fund operating budget.
But don't you spend that also on the point on the interest on that TAN?
Well, it flows down into your fund balance, basically.
But then back out to pay the interest.
Correct. It could do that, correct. And so this, you had gifts, you know, you had some CPSE revenue that you collected. There's various things that drove that number. That's a really hard one to forecast. You get a refund from BOCES, and so that's over, okay? The other area that you were fortunately over in is state aid, okay? So you can see you got $60,000 more than expected. By way of comparison, if you had the last year's financial statement in front of you, 2016, that number was much higher. It was about $473,000, okay? So that's kind of come down a little bit. On the spending side of the budget, you could see the actual expenditures. They're $39,172,000, authority to spend of $41,654,000 because of the budget revision and the encumbrances that were carried forward. There's $867,000 of encumbrances which get added on to the expenditures in order to come up with the variance as to what has not been spent of the budget, which is $1,615,000. Okay, and you're looking at, you know, about 4%. And
can you stop for a second? So $39,172 plus year-end encumbrances.
Correct.
I'm just not crystal clear on that. Year-end encumbrances means we haven't spent the money yet, but we got a bill.
If you had a bill, if the services were provided or if the goods were received, it would be an accounts payable number, okay. And that would be sitting in encumbrance. It's sitting in expenditures. So I committed to do something with a particular vendor, and the timing of it was such that it didn't get finished by the end of the school year. But the obligation is there because I already said I was going to go forward with these things.
So, like, what's central services, $626,000? What is that?
So things that might be in central services might be things such as, and I have a list here, actually. It was a purchase for young equipment. There was some landscaping work that had been done. There was a purchase through John Deere, something through Store Tractor. So there are a number of purchases for maintenance of the school property that typically take place during the summer when the children are not on campus. And so that's most of what the central service numbers are. And you can see the $1,615,000 by categories. And they're probably the biggest block of dollars that were not spent is programs for students with disabilities. And actually, the district recognized less expenses this year than the previous year. So that kind of drove the variance. You know, just by way of comparison, in the previous year, the expenditures were $300,000 higher. And it just depends upon what children come to the district with IEPs for services that have to be delivered. That's a really hard one to budget. And so that's pretty much the variance on the spending side.
So this is what we want to see on whatever it is, a monthly or quarterly basis going forward to know where we are and how we are. That was what we, right? Quarterly basis.
Okay.
And that can't start until January because we don't have enough data.
I would think that it might not be a good expenditure for you as a Board of Education until December closes and we have a soft close,
okay.
So to say, and then we could look at what contracts have to be fulfilled for the balance of the year.
And can we do it just then a monthly? Or is it
do you want to do it that or do you want to, I mean, you would want to do it in January for the month of December.
Uh-huh.
And then typically what I've done with other school districts, they want to look in March,
mm-hmm.
they want to look in April, and they want to look before the close of the year. Those are typically the time frames. But the board could decide that they want more than that. They could decide they want less than that.
So you look in March for February, April for March.
Correct.
And then you'd have that data as to what really happened when you do your final budget in April for approval in May.
Right. You would have two looks at the numbers, basically. As
three
far as
of January, March,
well,
April.
Well, April's a little late, right, because you're going to adopt, depending upon when you adopt the budget.
Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it?
That's
the way the calendar's going.
Okay,
so you could decide whether or not you want to roll up those winter months, the first couple of months, to get a better look. But I do think that you'll probably have a fairly good idea.
What does that look cost us, I mean, to have that those numbers kind
so
of prepared?
So typically what it costs, it's going to cost somewhere in the neighborhood of about, you know, my billing rate is $240, staff bill out at $190. It's almost a whole day job
right.
every time you look at it. So it could be anywhere from
$1,000
to $1,500. Right. And obviously we would try to contain the cost.
Mm-hmm. And is that something that we could, I mean, like, so I don't know accounting, but, you know, it could pull from where we are and we could have an automated system at some point or no? Like, meaning?
You know what takes the most time? Putting the numbers in an Excel template is not the difficult time.
Right.
The where we run into issues with the districts that we do it for is reaching out to the people that are responsible for their budget and really having them give you a good idea as to, you know what, I know these three other kids are coming through and we haven't had any paperwork yet, or I know we're going to buy this particular set of books before the end of the year. That's the difficult thing. It's not putting the numbers in place, honestly,
right.
because what Carol does for you is she encumbers all the salaries up front, she
mm-hmm.
encumbers the benefits, she encumbers the recurring contracts. It's just the responsibility.
The other stuff.
Yeah, and you know what, and in the end, that other stuff adds up really big.
Yes, yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes we're, I hate to say it this way, we're kind of like the police from the outside.
Sure.
Because Carol's trying to do her job, and now it's, we're there and saying, you know what, it's not only for you, Carol, it's for, you know, it's for Jill who's doing it for the Board of Education. And that's where you get a little bit more I hate to say it that way, that you may get a little bit more cooperation.
We look in January, and we see what it looks like, and then, you know, and that then you'll be able to tell us, listen, you got 6 months to go.
Correct.
This is where you are, this is what we expect. And then we can decide, do we want two more, three more, or one more?
Correct.
Whatever.
And we would have what the variables right. might be on there so yeah. that you can make a decision.
Yeah, I think that's
is
really
this
helpful.
What you want to do before the end of the year? And then at least the administration.
It's two purposes, though. What do we want to do before the end of the year? But it's also, are we serial over budgeters or under budgeters such that when we budget next year, we need to be more careful, right?
And I would say to address that question, so you didn't spend 4% of your budget. So the state likes a number no more than 5%. You're right where the state would want you to be, especially if you're appropriating fund balance in the subsequent year.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why we put this table in management's discussion and analysis back on page 11 is because you can get a good sense then. If I started with $1,649,000, on the revenue side I picked up $175,000, on the spending side I picked up $1,615,000. In round numbers, I picked up $1,008,000, right? Just for argument's sake.
No.
Of the $1,008,000, I gave $1,002,000 back.
Right.
Okay? And then I funded some money back into the reserves for which I knew I was going to need that money at some later date. So from a ratio standpoint,
and
I think the thing that's
also was the 626.75,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think
right
that's kind of an easy way to kind of look at it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's pretty much the most important part of the financial statement. How am I doing on time? Not that great.
No,
okay.
You got 12 minutes.
12
I got 12. I'm not doing that great. I'm sorry. I'm not doing that great. I have this whole book. Okay. Did you have any other questions on the process or the financial statement? Okay, and we know, just as a reminder, you know, because we have the two sets of financial statements, as your auditor, the most important part of the financial statement is page 17 and 19. This is the way your books and records are maintained. 17 is the balance sheet, snapshot June 30th, 2017. You have $10 million of assets, but of those assets, 3.4 are restricted, right? If you look at the cash section, because that's to cover reserves and obligations that you have. You have liabilities of 3.3, and the difference between the assets and the liabilities is your fund balance. Special aid fund, we remember that it's expenditure driven, so we don't recognize any revenue until such time as we spend it. And, you know, and just going back to the general fund for 1 second, because this is kind of important too. Of that, with those assets that you have, so you have cash. You have $3 million of unrestricted cash. You have $3 million of restricted cash, but you have $3 million of receivables, mm-hmm. right? And so those receivables, until they come in, are not available to take care of the expenditures during the month of July and August, and that's why, and so forth, and that's why you borrow on the tax anticipation note, okay? Food service, we looked at that before, so you have some fund balance because you had a small profit, and we looked at the capital project fund.
Are we targeting to have a profit in that?
$5,000.
Well, I know, but is that like the goal, or is there an opportunity to charge a little less for lunch? Or?
That's a tricky one.
Very tricky.
And I have to say, I've been to 7 board meetings already. You're the first district that has a little bit of a profit, and the rest of the districts are struggling with how do we put a transfer in our budget for when we have a shortfall.
An additional fund, you have to purchase something for the kitchen.
Correct.
The stove.
Which we did.
Yeah, we continue to do so. You know, you don't want to...
You have... Right. There are guidelines for pricing the meals. You are very
close. Guidelines as to the lowness, the lower level.
Correct. Or else you don't get your reimbursement.
Yeah.
And so you're on the hedge there. Okay. You know, you're very, very close, okay?
So then the point is that we have quite, okay, got it.
All right.
But in the school lunch fund, though, there's a lot of equipment over time that's going to have to be replaced.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's a good use of the money.
Yep.
All right, so that's the most important part of the financial statement, I think. Behind the next tab, then, the federal single audit will be in the process of completing that by March 31st, and that's the deadline for filing it. I would say probably more realistically January or February. Behind the next tab is the extra classroom activity fund. And the extra classroom activity fund report is a cash basis report. And just just as a reminder, the business office has no control over these funds. Okay, we're required to report it for state education department purposes, but these are the funds that really, you might want to look at a faculty auditor. Okay, a lot of districts have that, and that's a person who's going to look at every transaction to make sure that there's compliance at the cash receipts level and that the spending is appropriate. We pulled a sample of transactions, we, from a standpoint as far as the audit, are fairly comfortable with the comments that we put in the management letter. We could talk about them in a couple of minutes if you want to. It's the next tab, actually.
Tab 4?
Yes. And so the management letter, the first comment at the top has to do with the transfers. So the end-of-year commitments that were put in place resulted in some transfers into what's known as non-contingent budget codes. Non-contingent means that it's typically something like equipment or that had not been anticipated. And so that's a new comment, okay? Encumbrances and accounts payable has to do with the year-end transactions. What's an encumbrance? And you had asked that question, Josh, so I think we're clear now. I think that there was maybe not as good clarity before we started to do the audit. And everything that should be in accounts payable on the financial statement is listed as an accounts payable, and what's in encumbrances is based upon commitments that were outstanding as of
that's a typical end-of-year closing item, right, to have encumbrances there that are not AP. You've signed a contract in June. It's not yet done. That's common, correct?
It is common, right, because of the timing of the year-end,
yep.
Correct. And the most important thing is that you want to set aside. I mean, the most important thing is you want to encumber the money. So at least you know that you'll have it available at the end, you know, when it comes time to pay those bills in July and August. Capital assets, so we made a selection of assets and we tried to identify them in the within the school district buildings, and some could not be located. And this is typical because, you know, there are procedures for adding and for removing.
Backyards.
No. So, I mean, it's a matter of looking at the procedures again for maintaining the capital asset inventory records, maybe looking at a physical again and having a good starting point. At the top of the next column, because you have a good food service program, and because, to Carol's point, you might want to be looking at spending some money for equipment and to maintain things, the federal government has this crazy formula that says you should have no more than 3 months of expenditures in fund balance. That would be about 147. You have 224. That can change at any given time. So just something to be watched.
Is the lifespan of the devices in the kitchen on our maintenance plan? Like, do we know is stuff going and we're preparing to save for?
It's not on our maintenance plan. That's something that
we've got. The next item was taken care of by board resolution. It's specific to certain group of employees. Extra classroom activity funds, we had three comments. And basically it has to do really with maybe some training of the faculty advisors as to better practices with respect to the documentation that's maintained for the payments that are made and for the cash receipts. And looking at those activities that are conducted within the extra classroom and making a determination as to whether or not it's a bona fide club with student members who is a president and a vice president, and if not, then who should be handling that particular activity. And this is a very common comment in most school district management letters, and this takes a lot of work and constant monitoring, so...
Is there any way to do it where you just don't have cash receipts, so you don't have this issue?
I'm sorry?
Is there any way to do it where you don't have cash receipts, so you don't have the issue where you have people signing for cash? And
you mean taking credit card payments?
Venmo or something? I don't know.
I don't know because, you know, it's for the children. It's not even for the school district. So should the children be handling transactions in that manner? God bless you. I'm not sure the state would want to see that, really. So I think they want the kids to get comfortable with this is a little business that I have control over with someone from the faculty who's mentoring me. And this is how we record a receipt, and this is how we ask for someone to pay something on our behalf. And we can fundraise, we can do various things in order to bring money in. And so I think it's a matter of maybe conversation with the faculty advisors, again, about best practices. I mean, there's nothing egregious here, I mean, you know, at this point. So it's just, you know, looking at it. And
the data, the kids will probably end up using it, that's what I'm saying, but it's sort of money to my kids.
I'm sorry?
So to my kids, I'm saying that's how we transfer money. So it's interesting that they're learning this, but at the end of the day, when they go out into the world, they'll probably be using that and not that. You know, which is just getting ready for the future, which, what should we be teaching them?
Right, we should.
Advisor.
Correct.
Yeah.
We should, but I think you have to get the state to agree to that.
Yeah.
Because they have nothing published recently. The pamphlet they put out is years old, as we know.
Yeah.
And to your point, it hasn't been updated for anything practically, on a practicality basis. So, I mean, the last document in here is a communication to the board. So if there were issues with respect to the statements not being in accordance with the standards, it would be noted. There's no such notation of that. If there was a difficulty with us accessing information and having the opportunity to speak with the employees to gain an understanding as to a fraud assessment, that would be listed here. There was nothing like that. And then on page 3, as we did in years past, we referenced the adjusting journal entries, and we talk about those that we asked the district to record. So those are at the tail end of this document, and you can see them behind page 5. And there's 3. So I think the books are maintained very well. And then the adjustment that's on the following page has to do with the encumbrances, and so we asked for those encumbrances that related to the subsequent year to be relieved, and the district disagreed with us, so that's the one that they did not agree to record. Okay, it's all part of the fund.
Go back again.
The $155,000 on page. It says one of one, but it says at the top proposed entries. So if the first page says adjusting journal entry report, and there are 3 entries there, and the first entry has to do with recognition of the receivable on the smart bond money spent. Mm-hmm. And the next one has to do with receipts on the school lunch fund, and the last one has to do with the year-end changes in the fund balance in accordance with the board's authorization.
And what's the disagreement?
On the following page, yeah. So the treatment of encumbrances. So there were some encumbrances which we felt did not relate to June 30th, 2017, and we requested that the district consider them.
But in fact, related to July 1?
Correct. And we asked the district to consider moving them to the next period. And the district, since they're under the materiality level, the district said, no, we don't agree with you, we disagree with you. And so from the standpoint as far as what you're looking at, this adjustment has not been incorporated because it's the district's financial statement, okay?
But it doesn't cause you to have a qualified opinion?
No, because it's not material, okay?
And it's all grand is below 2% or whatever of the...
Right, it's over 2% but...
Understand what it is, just... We can talk to it separately.
Don't you? Correct. And so you know, so those things were satisfied during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they were encumbered and then nothing ever happened with the money. So
and
I think
you guys don't believe that they were June 30th things because the contract wasn't signed before that?
Because there wasn't a firm commitment with a vendor. There was a commitment as to what was going to get done.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a firm commitment as far as identifying the vendor who was going to do the work.
Got it.
Okay. So it's just... All right. And so overall, I think you have a very good report.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks
for coming. I want to play on you.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay.
Nice to see you.
I apologize. I ran over. Oh, we're just on time.
I do want to talk about the one. Tell everybody else to come in. Yes.
Okay. Everybody, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We just had our audit committee meeting. So first on topic in the regular meeting is drug awareness prevention and health services presentation. We're going to move on.
We're putting it up, so you're just going to have to just pause a moment while we put it up on the screen. We have the hardest working nurses in New York State of education. And you know, this was a little addition to what I think we spoke about in the spring, because when we spoke about it in the spring, we spoke about having a presentation with regards to drug awareness and prevention and what we actually do here in the district. So you're going to hear... You're going to hear in regards to three of the buildings and what's going on in each one of those buildings. The secondary campuses have put their slide together, and the elementary is a standalone, right, Ken?
Mm-hmm.
I believe. But we also thought, as we looked at some of the things the nurses do, part of our conference day this year was to have our nurses present to the entire faculty. We felt it was important to add them as well. So although theirs is not particularly about drug prevention, it's the life of the day of a nurse and what they do in our district and the amount of students they handle and all the different things, because I think it was an eye-opener to us this year when we sat at conference day just to hear about some of the specifics, whether it be about asthma or whether it be about allergies, epilepsy, and so on. I thought it was eye-opener. I know for me, I'm sure everybody else. So I asked them to be here as well tonight. So our opening slide will be from the nurses. I know that they don't normally present, so Chris and Sarah. Yeah, I can't thank you enough, though. You're at home, you're with families, so feel comfortable just feeding yourself and the community, and the board will appreciate it, but I do know that you're not normally in front of the crowd, so I do thank you for coming tonight and letting us know what it looks like for you two on a daily basis. So
thank you.
I see you have handouts. Yeah. Want me to hand it out with you first? So you
No, I think
okay.
That will be good.
Thank you.
This is why we wanted to.
I know. That's why I was here. I'm sorry. I know. I didn't. I hate doing this in front of everyone sitting here.
Sorry, everyone.
We were here at 6:30.
We what?
Thank
you.
Might have to get
everyone on. I think we
I tried.
I'm ready.
He might be like, might be a different input.
We had this problem with the retreat too. She took him up.
Oh, oh really?
Did she fix it?
Did she ever get her own computer?
She, what's that?
Did she have her own?
She had to use her own computer. And then it worked.
When she changed the computer?
Yeah.
Well, we should just
print
it out and hand it out.
This will certainly be on the website tomorrow. But what I'm going to ask, if you don't mind, who has another computer? We all do. Can you, Johnny, on the computer, see if we can get copies for everybody?
Yeah.
I know it's on our, I know it's on our email.
We did.
Well, we can have it for the
regular
ready?
Meeting.
Oh, that'd be great.
Great.
So we can go to the regular meeting.
Does anybody have a hard copy in their hands?
No,
I will go out and print it.
No, I think I have one, right?
You could use my computer. My computer.
I got it for 7:30.
Why don't we do this? While copies are made, we'll go through the meeting.
Yeah. Has it changed?
No.
Yeah.
There's one of them, so it's fine.
Let's start.
Okay.
There's one guy.
Okay. So we'll get copies for everyone.
So, first section of the agenda tonight is questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda only. Anybody have any questions or comments regarding tonight's agenda only? Yes, please come up.
George Maxwell. The contracts, number 11. I was just wondering if you could expound on the memorandum of agreement, Appendix I and J, for the Seven Riches Administrative Association.
Yeah, we were actually contemplating two amendments or two appendices that are not, we're going to be tabling them. They're not going to be on this agenda, so they're not going to be there.
So you can't speak of them?
No, we're not. We're going to take them off the agenda.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Anybody else?
Good evening. Marcus Babzian. So we have a presentation tonight on drug awareness. This kind of ties into drug issues in the district, general crime, things like that. So this is something that every community has to deal with. Part of dealing with it is awareness, so knowing what's going on. I know other districts make these events known to the public, so I was hoping that the board could weigh in on somehow publishing information on what happens in our district in terms of drug abuse, crime, you know, just some statistics that don't point to individuals, somehow anonymized data, but just on a regular basis, giving us an update, you know, yearly, semester, whatever it would be, some way of knowing what's happening along the lines of, you know, people found with drugs or even disciplinary action, crime, students, staff even, you know, whatever can be made available, just so we have a feel for what's going on.
We can talk about that.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Great. Motion to adopt the regular, the minutes of the regular meeting, September 13, 2017.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the following employee, an extension of her leave of absence, which is in compliance with the terms and conditions of the Santa Maria's FMLA policy.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the following employee a leave of absence as per Article 26 of the CMTA Collective Bargaining Agreement.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
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 Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the following employees to return to service.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, Board of Education appoints the following individuals as substitutes for the 2017-2018 school year as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, Board of Education approves the following appointments for the 2017-2018 school year.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the following contracts in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contracts, as well as at the established cost contained in said contracts, and authorize the President to sign said contracts.
Motion.
Crossing out those two.
Motion. Second. Hey, Carol, this nursing program agreement, that's...
We've had
permission for them to use this space, right?
Yes, and work with our nurses.
Okay. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, Board of Education accepts the 2016-2017 independent auditor's report.
Motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the following salary moves on the salary schedule effective September 1, 2017.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the Treasurer's Report for the months of June and July 2017.
Motion.
Second.
So, Carol, as I look at this, the Treasurer's Report, super, super early, right, first month in the budget, is there, you know, we talked about kind of getting something tight in December after 6 months, but is there anything in here that... you know, should jump out at me as a problem. So I look at EMO, 2.1 was projected for July 31. We have zero. Is there a reason? Or is that just...
zero variance.
We've got, we've received nothing, but...
Right.
Yeah. So is it, all of these are expected? Is that?
Yes.
So in the, and on the...
we'll start building them out in September.
Yep. Okay. Can we bill them earlier?
We can bill them and pay it.
They won't pay it? And then on the expenditure side, is there, you know, again, it's hard to kind of track 1 month in, but is there any, are there any expenditures that we have incurred that we wouldn't have typically expected at this
date? No.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon a recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves budget transfers.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
So just help me understand 4902867 going from one code to another code, para special ed to special ed 811. Is that, I'm just curious. Question is on the 49,028.67. Just what's the? I'm just curious to understand why would we have it in that code, but then later need it in this other code? Why wouldn't we have it in the first instance?
Sometimes when we budget, paras are needed in certain areas, and then when the year ends, there might be a shift in personnel to various programs. So we're going from one paraprofessional code to another paraprofessional. Just the way we segregated
them
in the budget.
Okay. Motion. Did I do that already? All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the monthly student activity treasurer's report for the middle school and high school for the month of June 2017.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education adopts the 2017-2018 tax levy in the amount of $22,653,881.
Motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. So, Carol, can you talk to us just about this? Explain what that 23,653 represents.
The 22,653.81 is what was approved as part of the 2017-18 budget. It was proposed
that's the amount that we've put in as a tax levy, but we don't yet know what the actual assessment is per house, because that's not
the assessment yet.
Broken up.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So
got it.
The levy will remain the same,
yep.
But the tax rate.
It goes up. The rate goes up. Right. Yeah. That's right. Okay.
Okay. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the corrective action plan for the 2016-2017 independent audit report.
Motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the corrective action plan for the internal report on capital projects and the risk assessment report dated December 1, 2016.
Motion.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the transfer of funds from the employee benefit accrued liability reserve for the payment of final settlements for retirees and increase the budget accordingly.
Where's the dollar amount for that? Whatever we're transferring into the employee benefit accrued liability reserve.
If we had one retiree and whatever the payout is, that's giving us the compensation.
So we don't know what the dollar amount is yet. It's whatever that payout is.
Yes.
Okay. motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the replacement of the sidewalk and curb at the Clayton Dewey Elementary School by Carl Schnitter Masonry Incorporated at an estimated cost of $9,500.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
So can you just tell us what this is?
Yeah, I know the board got to see this on the walkthrough in August, community can see it as well. If you go on the west east side, you will see that it's actually the last walkway that has not been done, and it probably definitely needs to be done. The curb itself is at this point in time really deteriorating, and recommended by Mr. Kelly as well as Carol Perkins that it be get done as fast as possible. I know I said that to the board of the walkthrough, and I really appreciate the support to move forward if you vote yes tonight.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
And you give Kim a big smile back there. She's very happy. It's not your house, Kim, but I know.
Recommended action that upon recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the following donation.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. Again, thank you to the PTA for their enormously hard work and donations. We couldn't do a lot of what we do without them.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the recommendations of the committees on special education and preschool special education for the month of September for the 2017-2018 school year.
Motion.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education conducts a first reading on the following policies.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education conducts a second reading on the following policies.
Motion.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Yes. Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following individuals for the various 2017-2018
committees. Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Do we want to jump back to the drug awareness and prevention program now?
Sure.
Sure.
easily slide it. You can't say the first slide.
Because I page. First page.
So am I mistaken? Are we going to start off with the...
Yeah, we're all going to come up.
We're all going to come up.
Well, for those of you who don't know, I'm Nurse Chris, Chris Schmutzler, and this is Sepika Benagio. And thank you so much for asking for a glimpse into the nurse's office, because a lot of people really don't know what goes on in the nurse's office. We don't just give out crackers and ice packs and Band-Aids. There's a lot more that goes into that, and you don't even realize it. So we're going to go over that with you. Sepika's going to start off.
I'm very nervous. I feel like first day of school. I have two kids at home, and every time that I go home, my heart butterflies. Every morning I come to school, I have butterflies to see my kids. I have hundreds of them. I'm just going to go over. I have daily routine and first aid and illness, such as fever, vomiting. I'm sure you're all familiar with it because I make phone calls to you. And we have screenings, vision screening, hearing screening, height, weight, and sclerosis. And also reports and paperwork we do. State mandated reports, we have BMI and immunizations. Accident reports, I have accidents for employees and students. And not only completing the reports, also make sure that the supervisors are signing and send it to the main office for insurance purposes. Communicable disease is something that we are aware of, which means that if we suspect that one of the kids has any communicable disease like mumps, we are obligated to report, of course, the administrator and the state health department. And immunization tracking, I will call you. I will send you mails and I will call you. And these are all state-mandated, New York State Health Department-mandated immunization. So we make phone calls, we make, we email you, we make connect at phone calls also.
So how does it work? You must have immunizations unless there is a religious exemption granted by admin?
Yes, religious exemption also, medicine, medical necessary. For example, I have a student who is very allergic to eggs and he cannot have certain vaccination. The doctor says, here's the reason, and we take it. So
how do we deal with the delta of those who don't have the exemption but still don't have the immunization? Is that an issue or no?
No, it's approved through Ricardo's office, yes. And then it also comes to me. So we all sign off on it.
Yeah.
We make sure the parent has handled it correctly through the process.
So far, so good.
Yeah,
so far, we are all covered. Yeah. And also physical exam tracking. And we have, for example, if the, I have a physical exam, a 7th and 10th grader, they are mandated to have, not mandated, but recommended to have physicals. Sometimes when we do sport physicals and general physicals, it says that watch out for cardiac if there is an abnormality. So I'll call the families and tell them, your son or your daughter may have cardiac problem, please take them to the doctor and follow up. So, also medications, I do give medications in my office. I have kids that they come every day routinely, they have pain, headache, anything. Anything that bothers, I have medications for ADHDs, you know, and so on and so on. And stomach problems. And also communication with parents. Again, I will call you. You will hear from me.
Can I ask a question on the physical exam tracking? When there's something like that that comes up, do you also communicate that to the coaches?
Yes.
To the teams that they're on?
Yes, we have communication. I make copies. Not only I email them, I also tell Mr. Thor, and if it's something that we should be aware, I email the teachers also, be aware until this kid clears.
Could I add something?
Sure.
Mrs. DiMaggio is very humble. I think I speak for Mrs. Bates and myself that ever since Mrs. DiMaggio started, she's changed the culture of the nurse's office. It's a professional office, loving, but it's tough love. It's not a hangout for kids, and the kids know that now. But what's really, really special about Miss Imagine was she is another important layer of connectedness with our student body. And she is so, so important in being on the front lines of not just illnesses, but social-emotional issues that without her insight, we would be at a disadvantage. Whether it's a pregnancy, whether it's some type of depression, substance abuse, whatever the case may be. So the more, maybe you heard the word support staff, she puts the support in support staff because, you know, more individuals like Ms. Imagine just make it more and more inclusive for us to have real insight into all these students that, you know, sometimes we miss something. Maybe I miss something. Maybe Mrs. Reggio missed something, but Mrs. Maggio was on the front line, and it was interesting what she said about, I have butterflies for my kids in school. That's how she treats them. And you should know that. And she wouldn't say that because she's very humble. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Another piece, too, she doesn't just email the teachers. Like, you should also know that Mrs. Maggio comes and meets with the teachers. So if there's an issue with the student, she'll come to our team meetings as part of our team, period one, when we meet during our professional field. She'll show up at our sixth grade meetings or seventh grade meetings and good news and talk about specific students.
It's true.
See,
it wasn't so bad.
It's having a
soaking. I just want to go back and say one more thing about immunizations. Kids come in and the kindergartners, and then we have other immunizations that are required for high school, and they change it every year. So this kid needs varicella, no, he doesn't, and it's really crazy. So there's a NICE system out there, which is good and bad. And the doctors can put it on the NICE system, and we can look at that. But lots of times they mess it up, and now it looks like they have the shots, but maybe they gave them a day before they were supposed to, and now we have to send it back. So it works both ways. But that is a tremendous thing, is the immunizations. We have to have an immunization report to the state by October 31st, and you have to show every child that they're completely immunized. You have to show your due diligence in trying to get them immunized. They're supposed to receive their immunizations day one, or we could give them 14 days or 30 days if they're from out of the country. And it takes up most of our time in September and October. Because it's very hard to get them to get it all together. They don't even understand what it is either. So they're like, oh, the doctor said it was that. No. This is it. So I just want to let you know.
But you won't get it done. I got to tell you that. I watched it. I watched it live the other day. Step number three, literally. I walked in on step three way to go. And it added some immunizations.
It is a nightmare.
At the older level, it'd be great that the kids aren't used to saying, I have to get this now. You know, seventh grade level or so. Mm-hmm. So level, but
yeah. And our parents, like, they have to sort through papers like this. I mean, you should see Nancy. Her desk is, like, everywhere. And her parent, too. It's a nightmare. But anyway, we get it done by the end of it. We have a list like this. And we keep going, and then the list whittles down. Okay. The other thing I'm going to talk about is student conditions. A lot of people aren't aware that what takes place in the nurse's office about student conditions. Years ago, a lot of kids wouldn't be mainstreamed into our school system as they are now. So we're seeing more and more children that are medically dependent. As a matter of fact, I went to a team meeting with a child, and what I do in the team meeting is if it's from Stony Brook or the doctors, sometimes I'll include the team. The doctors will come, the team members will come, and the staff, and we'll work out a plan for the child. And one of the parents said to me, you know, in my country, my child couldn't go to school because there wasn't a nurse. So it's really important that, you know, we're there for those kids every day. We have children with seasonal allergies, as you may know. We also have children with food allergies that require an EpiPen, and we have 69 of those in the district, and that's a lot, and every year it keeps going up and up. Now they're finding that even adults are developing tree nut allergies, so be careful. They don't know why these allergies come, but they can be life-threatening. We also have 5 diabetics in the district, and you might say, oh, that's just 5 diabetics, but a diabetic to a nurse can take up half of your day. It's not just there's their blood sugar, and we're going to give them insulin. You got to know, do they have gym today? Are they going outside? Is it hot? Is it cold? Do they have a test? I had a diabetic that actually had a test within my office because he would be 350, and then at the end of that test, in an hour and a half, he could drop to 50. And that is an emergency. So there's so much that goes into a diabetic child. They're always on my mind. Like, okay, I got to check with them. Oh, they're going out. They're not going out. It's cold. It's hot, you know. So it's really, a lot goes into keeping those children safe. And we also have a lot of staff in the building that you don't know about that are diabetic. The other thing is asthma. We have children that are on just maintenance asthmatic medication, and we have children that are really severe. I have a little guy that comes in, he's in second grade, and he stands there smiling, and then I check his oxygen level, and it's 80, it's supposed to be 100. And he just, you know, like I just, like my nurse radar goes up, and, you know, like it's you really have to spend a lot of time with them. Sometimes you have to call an ambulance if you can't get the medication into him. And that goes back to the medication. In the beginning, we have to track the medication. So day one, I stand at the front door with a shopping bag. People bring in their medications, and then I have to make sure they have the forms. A lot of them don't have the forms, so we have to follow up on that. And then if I know that there's an asthmatic from last year that's severe, where's his asthma inhaler? I'm going to need it. I'm not going to wait until when he's having an asthma attack to find out where his asthma inhaler is. I want to make sure that if they have something serious, that I have all the medications and I have all the paperwork that goes along with it. So that's a tremendous amount also. In the district, we have 8 cardiacs, and that's another thing. You know, you constantly have to keep that in the back of your mind. Maybe they have another, syndrome or something, and this is part of it. If they have Down syndrome, lots of times these are like different things that they have that goes along with that. So we got to keep that in the back of our mind. Where's the AED? Is the AED charged? Where am I going to go? What is going to be my plan? Who's going to help me? I just like to keep these plans updated. We have other children with spinal bifida, a child with some children with muscular skeletal disorders. Like we have a child that has loose ligaments and thin skin. And what that means is their ligaments can dislocate very easily. And I got pulled once down to the kindergarten wing because they fell off the chair. And I was like, no, they hurt their knee. They fell off the chair. How bad could it be? It was so bad that you could see the muscles moving because they have such thin skin as part of their illness. This is what the nurses do. It's not just handing out Band-Aids. And also we do health teaching. At the end of the year, Suffolk and I will get the list of where the children are going to be next year. We'll go with the teachers. We'll go around to each teacher. We'll have a team meeting. We'll go to all the support staff, the gym teachers, everyone that's going to be involved with that child, and make sure they know this is a diabetic, this is an asthmatic, this is what you need to do. We develop care plans, and I gave you a couple of samples in the packet, and we'll go over that with them. We'll arrange team meetings. We also redo it again in September. We'll do all these trainings again, and I touch base with each teacher for that, and so does Sephica. And like I said, we'll arrange team meetings sometimes with outside doctors and hospitals, and we'll bring them in so that they can help us understand. We'll get the people from the Epilepsy Foundation will come in sometimes, and they'll do a workshop for everyone, just so that everyone is on board and able to take care of that child. And now we add an extra layer. We just make sure that in case of emergency or they're on a field trip or they're out, that the teachers would know what to do. Not that they want to, but they would know what to do. Okay, now monitoring and treatment.
Monitoring and treatment. Blood sugar and insulin. In terms of the kids with the diabetes, we are monitoring their blood sugar and insulin as depending on how many times the doctor gives us. Sometimes doctor says 2 times a day, but sometimes the sugar are either low or high, so it's up to our judgment. Sometimes I take Jordan many times sometimes. I call the teachers, I call them, is he okay? How is he doing in the class? Even if they put their head down, please let me know. I like to make sure they're okay. I have a new student just newly diagnosed with diabetic. Every time I come to school, I am, is he okay? Because he doesn't know the sugar is low or high yet. He doesn't know because today he was low and he didn't even know. Because did you feel it? He didn't even feel it was low. So I have to be very careful on that. Sport physical. And nightmare. Sport physicals are exciting at the same time. It's nervous. Kids are that they want to play sports. They have to have recent physicals, and some don't have. And they say, "No, but I had it last year, but it was expired." So that's why we have physicals are done at school by our school doctor, Dr. Shah. I put them on the calendar purposely for families, so you can see. When you miss the physical with your doctor, you can just take a look which month It's almost like every 2 to 3 months, so you can have it done at school. I will do the pre-physicals, so Dr. Shah will do the rest of it. And blood pressures. We have kids that we have to monitor their blood pressure. They do have blood pressure medication, even though they're little, but they have kidney problems. So they do have a lot of medications for the blood pressure, so we monitor their blood pressures. Also adults. I do have sometimes adult comes to workers. Specialized treatments, catheterization. With this catheterization, especially with the spinal bifida, and feeding tubes.
So what systems do you guys use to monitor and track all this stuff? How do you?
Well, what I did, because when I got this job, my office didn't have, I'm not going to say they didn't have a system, but they had a different system. What I did when I got this job, an office, I put a place just for blood glucose, for treatments, for sports physicals. I just made folders, mm-hmm. and I wrote their names. And for example, if you come to my office and ask me, how many kids had an accident, incident accident last year, and how many hurt their ankles, I can answer you in 1 minute. Because I can make that awesome system. And it works. It's really working.
So, like, you've got, and you know, this is a great presentation. It's interesting to understand. But blood sugar, insulin, all of these different things, if you were sick for a week, God forbid, yeah. somebody else was in your place, how do they step in and understand?
Because I wrote them. I have a subfolder for them. Say that you came to my room and you want to be a nurse. Say that you're a nurse. You will, when you follow the directions on the paper, it says open the door 7:15. Mm-hmm. Your key is under the table. Mm-hmm. You have a kid will come at 10 o'clock. If they don't come, please call the teacher. I wrote step by step mm-hmm. everything. So that
and you update that each year for
yes.
the new kids? And,
yes.
and is that a similar system that you have?
Yes, and there is certain paperwork that we absolutely have to fill out for the state, and I have it in there for medication monitoring. There's forms that we have to fill out. We have to sign off every day. We have to sign off on the blood sugar. There's a regular form that every nurse in New York State has to fill out and sign. We also have electronic records, which is, you know, in the last, I guess, 5 years, we've been inputting it into the computer, all their immunizations. Their physicals, you know, that's another component that we didn't do before.
And nothing get lost. I promise you, I don't put anything in the garbage.
This is what my para kind of gathers. I didn't make copies, but it's so involved tracking all this information. So I just grabbed a little piece of that. And also, nowadays, I gave you a copy of our concerns list there. And I happened to be in the computer and watching, looking at all the stuff that was brought over and new technology. The nurse before me, she had a page and a half of concerns. I have 6 pages of concerns. So, you know, the medical needs have really increased.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Can you top that, Ms. Hardwick? I'm not
sure.
Just to kind of start it off, you know, when we're talking about drug prevention and awareness and all that type of stuff, what a lot of people seem to believe is that, you know, if we put all these programs in place, 8 and 12, it's just going to work. And that's not the fact. Okay, those are just resources for us to help kids, families, and so forth. What really is the most important thing to prevent drug use and abuse are protective factors. And they range from all over the place. It could be relationships that coaches, teachers, advisors have with kids, nurses have with kids, all of our support staff have with kids. Relationships and protective factors. All that together makes a comprehensive program. So what we're going to do is we're going to share with you some of the resources we use in the classrooms, in the schools, outside of the school day. We're going to give you some of that and kind of wrap it so you understand. I do want to point out, because you did ask the question about, you know, Ms. Bassett, about the problems we have. I can tell you with illegal drugs, we had one possession last year at the high school and middle school all year long. So doesn't mean that other kids aren't using or in possession of it, but that we actually had one that we were able to find, and it was addressed legally and so forth and so on. But we'll share with you some of the resources we have and some of the programs we do, and then we'll wrap it up as quickly as possible.
So at the elementary level, obviously it's really important to expose our youngsters in an age-appropriate way. Because as you can imagine, if I'm the parent of a first and second grader, I'm really concerned with how you're talking about such a difficult topic with my little one. And when you're looking at our primary level, it's really amazing the different cultural backgrounds that students may have, and some may see adults drinking with regularity, and others may have never seen adults drinking. And so we always have to take that into account. It is part of the health standards, and so in the curriculum there is the necessity to expose students to the awareness of drug use. And of course, our major focus, I would say, K-5, is all about awareness and making healthy choices. So I will say one of the nice pieces, grade 4 brought in, and this program existed. I don't know if it was before me. Actually, Lisa's here in the
private. No, we had reached out just to find something that would address what we needed to teach for health. So we got in touch with this program called Too Good for Drugs. And they come in, they do a 10-week program that's phenomenal, age-appropriate. Somebody comes in from, I believe, in Suffolk County.
And for years now. I mean, that was really, you guys were the first grade to get it in. And then when fourth grade had Too Good for Drugs, it just made sense that we would reach out to fifth grade and say, you know, we really want to continue the conversations because this is only going to become a topic that the students are exposed to more and more, and unfortunately in a much more severe way, and certainly the peer pressure involved was only going to get more difficult for our kids to navigate. So right now, I'm just going to go through a backwards model. So in 4 or 5, we have Too Good for Drugs. They come in, they push in, they are the experts in the field, and then the teachers hear the conversation, the teachers are present, they hear the conversation so that they can continue that conversation. And should a child have any questions, we want to make sure that we're getting them to the experts that can handle those questions tactfully and in a way that really represents the right answer and not just what our philosophy is. I think that as teachers, that's a real danger zone. So fourth and fifth, we have Too Good for Drugs. This year is going to be our first year that we're looking to add it. It will be in January, pushing into third grade. And Suffolk County, as we can imagine, funding is always an issue, but they are looking for a primary program that we could bring in K through 2 as well. It would be age appropriate, and that way we can say that we have experts coming from the outside in with a comprehensive K-5 program. In addition to that, in third grade, they actually start talking about alcohol. Alcohol is first introduced, that conversation is in third grade, where the K-2 piece, it's for the most part tobacco. Just the awareness of tobacco, what tobacco can do to your body, and then, of course, not choosing tobacco. And some people might say, really, second grade? Are you kidding me? But once again, if kids just know this is something that's not healthy for you, we just hope that they absolutely continue to make that choice. And you never know what a youngster is exposed to. And so when there's a late night party at their home and they walk into a room, if there's liquid in a cup, we want them to just have a sense of awareness that is not anything that I should be drinking. And so I will say that in the 8 years I've been here, we haven't had any parents call with some frustrations. For the most part, I believe that everything's been handled in an age-appropriate way. But we certainly look to continue upping our game, so to speak, so that we can really have that outside agency coming in K-5 with a focus on drug awareness. And that's the elementary piece.
Melissa? Okay, I'm actually going to share this. So if you look at the next slide, there's middle school and high school drug awareness and prevention. We have health education. It's mandated by the state. We teach it in 8th and 10th grade. Like I said, it's a mandatory course. All students, it's an everyday half-year course, although at the high school we do have one scenario where it's taught every other day all year long this year in particular. We've had senior health as an elective in the past. I want to be clear, we because of enrollment purposes, we're not offering it this year, but we do offer it consistently throughout. on a yearly basis we offer it.
And the curriculum for the health education classes is a point that
yes, there's a very, very comprehensive in both the 8th grade and the 10th grade unit on this type of material. In particular, I can tell you at the high school level, I happen to observe our health teacher in the library when students were doing presentations on various drugs, explaining it, and they had to explain it to their whole class. Every student had to go around and ask questions from each student about each drug, all the different information that was available to them. So that's a regular thing that happens in all the health classes.
So in addition to formal health education, which is mandatory, all students take in 8th and 10th grade, we have a variety of push-in programs, guest speakers, presenters that we bring to the middle school and the high school on a regular basis. Not every single one every year. We try to rotate it. But one of the common faces that all middle school students and high school students see is our school resource officer, Officer Nancy Ward. Mr. Caswell and I actually book her fall dates in the spring, so we're the first school in her calendar. So she's already been in every single classroom at the middle school and the high school. All of your children on the secondary campus have met her and had a full period with her this year. So she didn't start with the drug prevention. We start with social media at the middle school, internet safety and social media, and the next time she comes in for her second round, we'll be on drug awareness and prevention. So that's a common face and voice that they will have 6 to 12. In addition to that push-in program, we have other proactive measures like Mr. Thurston. One of the key ways to prevent drug use is by building those connections through proactive measures. And Ms. Fabian, our social worker, is a key piece in bringing in some of those preventative measures and also identifying at-risk students and families. So Ms. Fabian is going to talk about actually our transition to Too Good for Drugs in 6th grade.
So we recently invited Too Good for Drugs into our 6th grade curriculum. Ms. Brands is going to host that in her Family Consumer Science class. It's a 10-week series similar to what goes on in Clayton Huey. The first 5 chapters are geared towards social development, goal setting, self-esteem, self-awareness. The next 5 chapters go into individual drugs, the risks, and becoming more aware of the consequences involved with them. Again, we're working through the county as Family Service League. They recently got a grant, so now they have hired more professionals, which is why they can service more grade levels for us. In addition to Too Good for Drugs, some of the other initiatives that we've taken on and presented last spring, myself and the elementary school psychologist, Ms. Weintraub, on some of our character education initiatives. A lot of those initiatives are about building your confidence, becoming confident in making good decisions, healthy decisions for yourself, for others. In the high school specifically, we have a program called SMILES, where we train peer group leaders to basically be our eyes and ears. What we found was we had a lot of students coming to us seeking help for friends or family, and we wanted to enhance the skills that they already naturally had of being a natural peer leader. So we actually just these last 2 days started calling kids down, handing out our folders. They're identified either through guidance. I'll do some classroom push-ins to introduce the program to the students. I try to encourage students that are seeking a career in helping to work with us.
So in addition, again, another example, last year we created a speed and agility class, 9th period, for mainly for anybody, but for most of the enrollment was athletes who were going to play sports after school. That interest has blossomed, so now we offer it 1st and 9th period. And through that class, not only are they doing speed and agility and strength conditioning, things like that, they are also getting presenters. So we had Donald Lanham, who's Gene Lanham's son, come in. He's an exercise physiologist, I believe, or something along those lines. So he did a whole presentation on vitamins and things like that, and some of the things that get more and more risky for kids, whether it's creatine and other kinds of supplements that are out there. We have the Suffolk County police officers come in. They do a fitness component. They come in and train the kids themselves, and they talk about, again, at-risk decision-making and other things like that. So it's, again, we're trying to push different things in wherever we can, especially free resources and resources that we can get through our connections, and it seems to work pretty well. You'll see there we also have guest speakers and presentations. Merch is in the Bay Right to Know, the HUGS program. Kim Loud has been here. She's come to our athletic code nights and presented for me. We've had PTA. We've had the Booster Club support different initiatives and guest speakers, pay for them or whatever else. We've had Ugly Truth. We've had Survive the Drive and some other things like driving simulator for students that were under the influence. They get to drive in a car that shakes and they have vision goggles to see what it's like when you're under the influence. So these are all different resources, all different programs, all different opportunities that we give all of our students so that they understand the risks, the dangers. But I'll go back to what I said before. It's the protective factors. We've got to continually offer positive experiences for our students, whether it's, you know, the whole gamut of what we offer in the school. We have to continue to push our teachers, our staff, all of us to have relationships, not only with our students, but with our parents. And I can tell you at secondary campus, and I'm sure also at the elementary school, that we find out more things that are going on because of those relationships. We know ahead of time that there may be a fight going to happen fifth period, or that something happened on social media, or 2 days ago I had a ring stolen, and it was this big caper, and ultimately I was able to, you know, talk to some different kids or whatever else, and sure enough, I said, I just want this ring back. And sure enough, I found it in the room that a kid told me about in a certain location, and I got it. So it really is about relationships. It's really about those protective factors. We still have to do comprehensive programming. We still have to offer all kinds of guest speakers and give students every opportunity because, as Mrs. Hartwick said, we don't know what happens behind closed doors. We don't know what kids are experiencing in their homes, and we don't always get cooperation or information from parents. So we have to be, you know, the educational force as well as the protective factors for a lot of our students. Are there any questions?
Narcan training. Who has anybody in the district can do it?
Who's been trained?
We were all trained. We trained the staff, and we have it in at the secondary campus.
Staff and administrator.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Boy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Questions from the audience? Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Last slide. Last sheet. Oh. So, in the interest of trying to improve what we do, I have already started this informally, and I will do it more formally. We are creating a survey that we're going to get out there to our constituents. I've already sent out my own survey to the phys ed and health and athletic directors in Suffolk County with some questions. What do you use? What are some free resources you use? What websites do you use? What guest speakers do you use? I've already got about 16 pages of answers and some excellent resources to see and compare. What can we add? What do we do? What can we get that's free and push it? So this is our timeline. We've already created or in the midst of creating one. I've already distributed my own. We're going to distribute the other one in November, and hopefully by December we'll have a pretty comprehensive list of things, and then hopefully we can, whether it's through the Health and Wellness Committee or just through the school district, we will post these, you know, these resources.
And then possibly after your program.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's the point. So I just wanted to let you know.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Can I just comment?
Sure.
Hi, Tracy Lutz. Just wanted to really drive home the point how critical these nurses are. Some of you know, my grandson was diagnosed with diabetes when he was in the second grade. And he's been in the care of Chris Mutzler from second through fifth, and now Sepica. And these women, they're like family to me. I mean, they'll be off for the day, and they'll still be in touch with that nurse who's in the school building, and they're texting me how my grandson is. So, I mean, it's invaluable. And a lot of people, they don't understand, you know. A lot of the illnesses that our kids have get minimized, and many of them are life-threatening, including diabetes. So one diabetic is too many. Five, forget about it. I don't know how they do what they do every day with such loving care. And I would advocate as a taxpayer that if you have any extra resources and you can throw them the nurse's way, it would go a long way to help them do everything that they have to do even better. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just
Sure. Okay, just to add to that too, like, you know, I'm sitting here listening to the list of things, and you know, when you work in the world of education, you understand completely where they're going with it. You're almost like short of half a nurse. Because what happens if they're out? The familiarity with the kids, the school, the system, things that go on. You know, that floating nurse is something that we debated in our school years ago and was cut and then brought back because of kids with medical needs. And, you know, if they couldn't attend a field trip because there were no nurse present. So maybe even like a floating half a nurse, a 0.5 that comes in from 10 to whatever, that allows for some, you know, I guess that safety thought for the parents, but not even for the nurses. So when they are out, they can have that same mold that they have on a day-to-day basis. So maybe that nurse goes back and forth, or they need a lunch break.
You know, it's not the nurse that I had when I was in elementary school who was about 90 years old. Some serious stuff. And when you think about how many students we have, you have one nurse per building.
Safety is the number one priority. I mean, that's it. Safety and health is the number one priority. That we can't do anything. So, I mean, I think the points are certainly well received and something that we should discuss. That, you know, at budget time as we go through this, it's certainly.
Yeah, cool.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next section we have on the agenda tonight is general discussion, replacement of secondary tennis courts. So, you know, as we've discussed a little bit, the tennis courts that Tom Kelly came and presented, you know, were in disrepair and, you know, as a result of kind of subsurface issues over the years, and we're spending approximately $20,000 in our maintenance budget each year to not even resurface them, but to fill the cracks and keep them kind of able to be used for matches. You know, we had a quote in connection with the first bond of approximately, I think, $780,000 to replace the tennis court.
It wasn't to replace, it was just resurface.
So there was a replacement, and then there was a resurface of approximately $200,000, I think, for all of them, right? The replacement was like
six, about 120 each.
Yeah. So I think it was over 700 to replace. We're told, I think, and I spoke to Grillo this week, that the resurfacing wasn't necessarily an option now because of the subsurface of the tennis courts. I mean, that was what he said. So, you know, I think $700,000 is an enormous amount of money, although portions of it could be aidable. I reached out to the town, you know, as I think talked to all of you guys and mentioned that Tom, he was here, around kind of a joint replacement program where, you know, the town facility, they have the football and lacrosse field now, which is phenomenal there. And if there were an ability to use certain tennis courts, you know, would they have an appetite to share the cost of replacement? And the answer came back preliminarily. Obviously, it's all subject to, you know, getting in their budget and town vote. But yes, they would have an appetite to share the cost. So, I mean, I think the point of this general discussion is, for us to do our three, so the conversation was they'd do three, we'd do three, you know, and we'd share it, and we would then be able to save the $20,000 a year in maintenance costs and have the kind of updated courts. For us to do our piece of it, we would need to, and have it aided, right? Ultimately, we'd need to have it included in the capital, in the budget vote in May, which is, you know, not a big deal. But I think also then to have the work done immediately thereafter, we need to do some state education. I had a conversation with Pearl this week, state education, boring A&E, you know, leading up to that to make the filings. You know, in relatively nominal costs for, you know, in connection with the entire project, the portion of our project, as I said, would be aidable at 65% is what he said. From my perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense to do this and to go forward and work on our piece so that we're ready to go after we get a little bit tighter with the town in connection with their, you know, their agreement. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that.
I'd like to see a lot. I mean, the numbers sound good. Are we going to, in other words, dig up the surface and it needs a firmer base?
That's, yeah, the base is apparently not
going down.
Yeah, it's not just like a quick grind and resurface, which is cheap there. You know, I don't know if it is a full, you know, removal and new, is that what it is, full removal? Yeah. New drainage.
And maybe the fencing comes down and everything to do the work, I guess. Maybe it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I mean, the quotes that we got were to replace everything. New fencing, new, you know, new
all right, we'll
new base, new nets, the whole thing. Soup to nuts, done, painted.
So, once the lighting's addressed, too, make sure lighting, I think most of the lighting is working, but make sure at the same time we address any. Which I think is probably not a bold issue.
Part of the deal will be ultimately that there will be some use agreement, similar to the field, you know, the lacrosse field and the football field, soccer field, similar to the playgrounds, you know, where they're paying for a piece of it. It'll be open at some point. Those details will have to be discussed for the community, but it'll be segregated to the school during the time of the school, whatever it needs.
When were these tennis courts, like, what's the lifespan of a tennis court? When did we put in?
I think
we
put in 2003.
It's before me, but it's probably the start of the expansion. You know, so it's probably 2000.
They're just deteriorating rapidly. And, you know, since I've been, it's my 8th year. And every year, boy, it definitely is getting worse and worse.
It sounds like if there's subsurface conditions, there should be an investigation done to see if they need to do something additional, you know, beyond what was done during that initial installation, you know, as far as a deeper base, you know, a different substrate, something under there. Because I would think, due to normal use, it would be a resurfacing issue. This sounds like the whole structure is deteriorating.
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice. Once the water goes in and that went to hits, you think you're okay.
Or how it was going to first instance.
How it was going to first instance. We want to make sure what we buy is, you know, going down the road. And what I was going to add previously was, so my only concern with this would be, obviously, I mean, we would have our school time for the courts. I believe they're utilized after hours quite a bit by the community in an open forum. So would the town be scheduling events?
I think it's part of the conversation we could have. We could say to them, listen, you know, we want to have, you know, X days, I don't know what it is, available for open play. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the answer to your question is yes. They're not going to pay if they can't otherwise schedule.
No, my only other concern is, you know, parking and logistics, so that whatever they're scheduling for use of the tennis courts isn't somehow impacting some other event that we have on the field or, you know, within the school, you know, in terms of traffic. And
no, I think it's a perfect point. I mean, I think that's right. I think we need to talk about that. They have parking at their other facility as well.
Right.
You know, so it's possible that you can say if during, you know, whatever weekends we have, they're directed to park, you know, in their other facility. And I think he's going to expand that.
Which is, you just added all that parking. It's a short walk to a tennis court. So that's
exactly.
Great. Time.
Okay, so I mean, like I said, it'll be a bit of spend. I don't know the exact numbers for the Grillo work, you know, going forward, you know, in the next months, and the filing fees for the state education.
And you mentioned a pickleball tie-in. Right?
Yeah. So what they do is they it's like a multi-purpose cross field. Yeah. Same idea where they cross football, soccer painted. They want to paint pickleball and tennis court and maybe basketball on the same so they can be used. Pickleball apparently has gotten very big.
It's only going to get bigger.
Top generation plays pickleball.
From mine up, you know, playing pickleball, absolutely. You can go the distance and put pickleball. much less area to cover. Good.
But he told me, I was having the conversation, I thought like really it was just like a Florida thing, and they said they had a tournament this series.
There's an 80-year-old thing that happens in Arizona once a year. And only eight, you know, so it's that. You know,
they had a tournament in Babylon, Brookhaven Town. You don't know about
that. I'm not
talking about
Babylon.
Our kids playing
in high school. We're playing on the gym floor.
With like 60 teams 2 weeks ago.
Brookhaven sponsored
pickleball tournament with 60 teams in like ice slip or something.
Yeah. Arizona, it is.
But you
huge. We teach it to our
dad
program.
Yeah, which is cool. Yeah. And where do we have the court? Or do we just? How do we do it?
We use the volleyball court in the gym,
which is a lower net.
We have nets that we.
And the wood floor is not as good a response as a you know tennis base. You know?
Yeah, but it doesn't have cracks.
Well, yeah, steady at least, no cracks.
Listen, I think
you get a good bounce off of the cat on there. You know,
my sense is it's a good opportunity to get paid things that, you know, this small, our small group couldn't otherwise pay. We certainly couldn't pay $700,000 or $800,000 from our budget and to increase, you know, to float a bond for it would result in a great increase. So I think it's a good opportunity. Next section of the agenda, questions and comments from the community items not on tonight's agenda. Anybody have any other questions or comments? Okay, great.
Dates, remember, next Board of Education meeting will be Board of Appreciation Night, October 18th, 7:30 in the LGI. Everybody can attend. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussing plus negotiations under the Taylor Law with the CMAA, matters resulting, disclosure which would result in unwarranted invasion of personal privacy, personnel matters. Motion?
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes, motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Thank you.